You're listening to a download from theoutdoorstation.co.uk. Number 5, 4, 6.
Hello and welcome back to the Outdoor Station. This is a continuation of the recycled 2006 10-part TGO Challenge series, which for some reason is missing from the current listing. Sadly, certain voices you hear, such as Andy Howell, Steve Perry and a few others, are no longer with us. 2006 seems like a long time ago now. However, although equipment that people use may have changed, the spirit, the emotion and the adventure the challenge represents will always remain the same. So for those who like long-distance trail diaries, enjoy.
You're listening to Podcast Bob doing the TGR Challenge.
Brace yourselves!
Backpackinglight.co.uk.
The UK's first outdoor podcasting show.
Minimum weight.
Maximum fun.
Hello and welcome to this special Backpacking Light podcast 10-part series recorded as part of the 2006 TGO Challenge, sponsored by The Great Outdoors Magazine and Berghaus. For those of you who don't know, the TGO Challenge is an organised walk which takes place in May of each year, from the west coast to the east coast of Scotland, which is approximately 200 miles. Set up in 1980, the framework and principle is totally unique. It isn't a race or a competition of any kind. The object is to foster good fellowship among walkers within the framework of a challenging expedition. The start consists of 12 sign-out locations on the west coast, from Torridon in the north down to Ardrishaig in the south, and each challenger, solo or group, makes their way via a high route, low route or mixture of the two across Scotland to finish anywhere between Arbroath and Fraserburgh on the east coast. There's a set two-week window to do this in, and each participant submits their route for inspection prior to departure for safety and advice reasons. The places, however, are limited to 300, and details about the event, if you're interested, and entry forms and past diaries can be found in the October issue of TGO Magazine. Each participant makes the challenge as easy or as hard as they wish. The extremes can be a solitary, remote route, sometimes not seeing another person for days on end, or a route which takes in the many social events, perhaps using established accommodation all the way. Most people do a mixture of the two in different forms. This year, I undertook the crossing with my wife Rose, from Lochaylort to Dunatar Castle. As we went, I recorded this audio diary to try and capture the atmosphere and to share our experience and those of the many people we met en route. The 2006 TGO Challenge, Part 7. On Tuesday, we get a fresh, sunny start after a frosty night at Tarfside and head towards the Fetteresso Forest via Charbothy, before camping down at the end of Glen Dye with Lee, Steve and Lorraine. A short distance of 17.2 kilometres, a climb of 510 metres and a descent of 503. The following day, we head into the Fetteresso Forest and catch up with Steve Perry for his thoughts on this, his first trip. However, on the walk from Tarfside, we meet Hugh Brown for the first time from Ireland. And at Charbothy, he shares with us his thoughts on this, his first challenge.
I've enjoyed it considerably. I've had some magnificent days. I've had some really quite dull days in terms of the walking. But you have to accept that with the overall goal that you have. Interesting mix of people, nice ethos, and of course it's taking you to places that you wouldn't normally get to. So overall it's been, I think, a considerable success for me.
You've done it on a solo basis, is that correct?
I have. Originally I'd chosen to do it with a friend, but then when he had to pull out, I considered whether to do it on a solo basis, and I think I'm quite happy to have done so. I would tend to be fairly gregarious with my walking, and I usually prefer to walk with other people, but you're not terribly isolated for very long on this, and the So I think it's you wouldn't let being alone put anybody off. Mm. Not at all. Mm. Not at all.
From a practical point of view, whereabouts did you start from and what did you find the terrain like?
Strathcarron through into Glen Affric and Glen Cluny and across over to Fort Augustus. Very, very mixed. You find I was on a low level route, being a first timer, and so you're not taking on the tops. Quite a lot of the areas are untracked, of course, or the tracks are more or less non-existent. But there's nothing particularly difficult. A bit boggy in parts. You have to be happy to plough through bogs for a few hours. But, but then, if you're not going to be walking in Scotland, if you're not,
Absolutely. Now you've been to Scotland a few times before. So you were saying that you've done a few Munros and so on. So the Scottish experience isn't new to you. But if you were describing it to somebody who was considering it for the first time and that hadn't sort of undertaken
coming to Scotland for the first time.
Scotland, yeah, and some of the terrain, perhaps some overseas visitors that we do get on the challenge occasionally. What way would you? What sort of thing would you tell them to try and anticipate, really?
I think variation would be the thing. I suspect some people come here and neither they expect, maybe if their experiences of some parts of Europe or, say, of the States, they expect maybe paths to be more prepared. They expect maybe route finding to be very simple and straightforward. They may be taken by surprise just how wet it can be and how variable the weather can be. We've had a fairly fresh sort of crossing this year. We've had quite a lot of rain and so forth, but you can get a 20 degree temperature swing in a day, and the people have to be prepared for that, and that's more than people face in many other walking areas. You have that degree of preparation, I think. Mm.
And equipment wise, you've got a fairly large pack with sort of a fair amount of stuff in there, I notice.
Yes.
What would you advise anybody to consider when they're packing the rucksack for something like this?
Keep it to a minimum, I suppose. When you have some fairly outdated kit and so forth, you find yourself with, well, both volume and bulk, bulk in terms of weight. I suppose the other thing is that there's no point in, most people aren't going to go ultralight. They're not going to invest in the kit and all the rest. So just make sure you're used to what you're going to have to carry, and just make sure you can carry it. Mm. It's very easy just to throw everything in your bag the week before and find yourself buckling at the knees a couple of days later. So a wee bit of forethought.
Yeah, and spread the food as well, not try and carry all the food, I suppose, is a good tip, isn't it?
I've sent a couple of food packages ahead, and that's really very simple to do and very sensible. And in the nature of this event, wherever you're going to stay, whatever bunkhouse, whatever, they're going to be accommodating. So it's very simple to do. You can ease your load considerably.
Mm-hmm. You're from Northern Ireland.
Yep.
How does this the walking here compare to Ireland? Because I've not been to Ireland on a walking holiday. Is it easy to get around? Or have you got open access that you can get to for pleasant walking?
We have plenty of pleasant walking. We don't have anything on the scale that you're going to get here in Scotland, so it tends to be day walks. The Irish landscape doesn't really lend itself very easily to multi-day walking in what you'd call sort of semi-wilderness areas. You have to contrive that sort of experience. In the south of Ireland, there are considerable issues in some areas with access, you tend to find if somebody were travelling there and they wanted to check to see what the situation was, there are a couple of magazines and their associated websites that are probably worth looking at. There's the Irish Mountain Log and there's Walking World Ireland, and they will tend to have quite a lot of information. There seem to be certain areas, for County Sligo and so forth, where they have real difficulties with landowners, and it's really quite restrictive. In the north of Ireland, the rules that apply are more akin to those that would apply in England or in most parts of the UK. Not as free and open as Scotland, not as restrictive as parts of the south of Ireland. But there's quite a lot. There is actually quite a lot of good walking. Quite a lot. I would advise people to give it a go.
And from now, a couple of days before there's sort of the gathering on Thursday night, you're heading off from here. Whereabouts are you planning to finish?
I am heading south, and I'll finish tomorrow evening. I'll finish tomorrow evening at St. Cyrus or John's Haven, depending on how the whim takes me. Unfortunately, I have to get home, so I won't be able to stay for the Thursday night, which I gather is a pretty good event. Maybe if I do it again, I'll plan on that. So I'll be heading off straight away on tomorrow evening. It's been a good experience, and I think I'd be probably quite happy to repeat it.
So are you hooked? I mean, that's the thing. People on the first experience.
I'll say with hindsight. I'll judge that with hindsight. Yeah. I have enjoyed it. It's not my normal form of walking. Normally, you'd be thinking of coming over and having day walks and doing the tops and so forth. So it's a different sort of interest, and it'll be interesting to see with a little bit of hindsight how you sort of regard it. You know, at the moment, you feel very positive because you're coming towards the conclusion and so forth, and you're kind of excited maybe isn't the right word, but it's stimulating, you know, and it'll be interesting to see what I feel once it settles down, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be pretty positive.
Hugh headed south on the path while we continued east until we came to a smashing little spot already chosen by Steve and Lorraine by the bridge at the end of Glendie. The wind was still harsh and cold, but we set up camp, ate a warm meal, and decided to have a bit of a gear review. Well, it's Tuesday evening, and we've got the tent all sorted, and we've had, for us, an early finish, actually. I think we finished about 5 o'clock-ish today. While the weather was still good, which is interesting for us again, and although it was blowing a bit, we aimed for Charbothy from Tarfside, which we got to fairly early, to be fair. It wasn't too bad going, a bit hard going on the heather at the top, and as people did warn us, there's a couple of deer fences you've got to negotiate, which involved a little bit of crawling and throwing of rucksacks, but we made it in the end. As we went, sort of our motley crew gathered Hugh, an Irish guy, who was very pleasant company. And a couple of lightweight guys with smaller rucksacks, Andy and his walking partner. We sort of fell into easy conversation, as you do, and because of that, the miles just disappeared. But it wasn't a bad walk at all. Very good underfoot, the track, not lumpy stones, but a fairly smooth track at all. And we got down to Charbothy, and then we made a sort of a collective decision to go our separate ways. Steve and Lorraine came through and they went on ahead. Hugh decided to head south and along with the lightweight guys. And ourselves and Lee decided to continue down Glendie, down towards the Spittle Cot, which is a ruin by a bridge, just before it hits the B974. So we got down here a fair time. The cold wind was once again biting at our heels as we came. Which was just, it just makes your shoulders ache. It's so unpleasant. Much colder than last year from that point of view. It really is just uncomfortable, really, just uncomfortable. But we managed to get the tent up and get ourselves sorted, and I'm glad we did, because blimey, didn't the weather turn. All of a sudden it heaved down again, temperature dropped like a stone. We got all our clothes on, we're inside sleeping bags, thinking this is just ridiculous. So this is not the first time it's happened. It's happened quite a few times on this trip. You get to sort of like 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and then for some reason the temperature just dives. So anyway, we sorted ourselves out. We've just had a nice veggie stew, homemade dried veggie stew and some rice, and finished that off with some chocolate and some luxury nibbles. And it's getting towards 9 o'clock now, and we're just thinking about turning in and quickly nipping out and just doing the washing up. We're down by the stream and turning in. I see Steve and Lorraine part of camp their tents just a bit further on. And they've tucked themselves in by the sound of it. And I know Lee is in the process of doing the same thing. But I thought it might be a quick opportunity just to go through the gear that we've used and some of the results that we've had so far, just in case, just to keep the gear people happy. And get Rose's point of view on some of the items that she's had as well. And some feedback. Firstly, the tent, which is the Terra Nova Solar 2, has performed very, very well indeed. I was very worried that night at Dublock. I have to say the wind was coming at a hell of a rate from the front, and the tent took a hell of a battering, but it survived beautifully, and it's done us well. Bit of condensation every now and again, but we just tend to leave the vents open and open the front door slightly, and that is reduced to nothing at all. So the tent has performed handsomely, and there's certainly plenty of room in here for for two people, certainly someone as tall as me, I can lie out and I can still have a rucksack at my feet or my head. That is very comforting at 6 foot two, not to be having one end pushing the tent. The Alp Kit sleeping bags we've got, they've been good, haven't they, Rose?
Oh, superb. I'm a bit of a cold fish and I was worried I was going to be cold. But they have absolutely been brilliant.
So that's the Alp Kit Pipe Dream 600s. I have to say that it has been sub-zero, I'm sure, a couple of nights, and they've performed beautifully. Felt very warm and comfortable in those. We had the three-quarter Thermarests this year. We could have taken the smaller ones, but we decided on that. We wanted a little bit more comfort for the weight. And once again, really glad we did, because the ground was very cold, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's noticeable as soon as you're just knelt on the tent floor instead of on the Thermarest, just how cold it is, biting you so. I know they've made a terrific difference as well.
So that's made that much more comfortable going. What else? The cooking gear, the tea light stove, sadly has got blocked on the third day, which was a bit of unfortunate, and I haven't managed to have the tools to clear that. But we did have the peak ignition, and that's worked first time every time, and that's really kept us going with hot drinks and so on. So that's worked really well. We've got the folding plates as well, and that's always been a useful addition, hasn't it, to have the folding plates?
Yeah, really useful. Use them for sort of cutting and putting hot things on and all sorts. And of course, sporks have been great. Use those for everything.
Yeah, yeah. We had 3 1-litre platypus bags and 1 2-litre, and the 1-litre ones have proved to be the most useful. The 2-litre... obviously it's useful to have that amount of water, but when you actually have it inside your sack as a hydration pack, it takes up an awful lot of room, and I would prefer to have 2 1-litres because I can pack them better. So personally I'll change to keeping to the 1-litre route myself. But interesting, we've just calculated it now, just cooking this meal, having a couple of drinks, boiling a little bit of water for cleaning up afterwards, easily gone through 2 litres of water just in doing that. So, you tend to, as two people, you do tend to get through a fair amount of water. What else we got? Clothing-wise, we've used everything we've brought, haven't we?
I've used everything except my shorts.
Yeah, me too.
I probably could have put them on once or twice, but actually just roll my trousers up. So the shorts are actually the only thing I haven't worn.
So we have both had Terra pants, which have been absolutely
brilliant.
Fantastic, haven't they?
Fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, they do keep most of the weather off, and when they get wet, they dry so fast. I have to say, they're brilliant. Brilliant design, Julie. Well done. Fantastic pair of trousers. We had the Smart Wool, the Bionic Tee Smart Wool T-shirts.
They've been good because we haven't been able to wash any clothes for quite a few days now, and although we do smell, we probably don't smell as bad as we could.
Yeah, absolutely. Smart Wool socks, they've been sort of washed and rotated. They've rotated and performed, haven't they?
And dried quite quickly, considering, too. I've been quite impressed with how well they've dried. Because it's certainly not been the weather for it hanging off the back of the rucksacks, but they have, so it's good.
One addition that has been really useful and probably vital for both of us is as a down jacket or a down top. I've got the Klatter Munson one, and you've got the Go-Lite down jacket, and then we've really needed these a couple of times, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely, being invaluable. As soon as you stop, especially me, my temperature just drops, and it's just not only feeling comfortable putting something warm and enveloping it on, but it does the job brilliantly. Just instantly feel that warmth come back. So
yeah, keeping the heat in, isn't it? Mid layers, we had. I've got the Montaigne. I can't remember what it's called now. The Infinity shirt, is it? Absolutely brilliant, loved it a bit. Sort of a power stretch type top. And have you had a Pilotech 100?
No, a Smart Wool type. It's been again excellent. I really worn that a lot.
And then we had a sort of assortment of hats, really, a couple of mats, and a couple of Berghaus beanies, which have been, again, invaluable, because the weather temperature variation has been incredible at times. I mean, it has been a good 20 degrees swing it can be glorious sunshine and you really feel you're reaching for the suntan cream, and the next minute it's freezing.
No flurries.
Absolutely freezing. The waterproofs, we've got Superfly jackets.
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
That trip down from Lochdu, I don't think I've ever been so wet. With the mixture of snow, rain, wind, everything was absolutely drenched. But actually, as soon as I took off my Superfly jacket, my waterproof trousers, actually I was pretty dry underneath, which was amazing with the amount of water being thrown at us. So it's been a brilliant jacket. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, and it's
really hard working.
Yeah. And then, of course, we've had wind shirts. I had Featherlight, the smock one, and which one did you have? Lightspeed, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Lightspeed with a full zip, which, again, brilliant.
Yeah. So when the weather is just a bit inclement, again, it's the cold wind. It's always the cold wind in Scotland. You've got to be prepared for it. It just keeps it out enough to enable you to keep moving and obviously get rid of the perspiration. So they've performed exceptionally well. And if nothing else, and they dry so fast, which is vital, and once again vital in Scotland. And that has probably been pretty well our kit list.
Gaiters we brought and not really used.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Well, the Terra pants have been quite good because they've been so long. They've actually bypassed the need for gaiters. And also when we've been going through the wet peat bogs, they haven't actually got that deep. And mind you, I went in a couple of times, didn't I?
No, it seems to brush off, wash off quite easily. So that's been pretty good. I had brought some gloves and the backlight mitts, waterproof ones, Gore-Tex, that they've been really good.
Again, that was again keeping the cold wind off, wasn't it?
Yeah, and rain. And waterproof trousers.
Yeah. And a small first aid kit. The first aid kit has been vital, and if anything has been vital, it's been the Nurofens and the ibuprofen Jesus. And cubuprofen. And Rose has gained a nickname of Ticky Rose, as we found 25 ticks on her at Tom Doon.
At Tarfside yesterday, they were saying that there was a guy who'd been part of a programme or was something to do with Scottish television where they'd actually been doing filming, saying how there'd been a huge increase in ticks over the last 3 years. Taking evidence from shepherds and so forth, how 3 years ago there'd be one or two ticks on a sheep, maybe. Last year there was sort of 5 or 10, and now this year apparently up to 50, and it's just quadrupled. So
there's a tick invasion going on.
Yeah, something like that.
What else have I got by my feet here? No, that's it. I mean, a spare set of clothes for me has been a Ron Hills and Sub-Zero long sleeve top, and that I've used that once or twice. One particular cold night, I got changed into my dry gear and got into my bag. I have to say, it has been very, very cold at night, and the ground has been very, very cold. If you slip off the mat, you feel it straight away. Certainly completely different from the last couple of years. And the two rucksacks, what have you got? You got the Z-Pack, the Gregory Z-Pack. Been happy with that?
Yeah, I really like it, actually. And, easily fit in all I need to. Good access. I mean, with the side zip, I was able to pull out the tent when we need to camp without undoing all the pack. It's got a nice web side features. Back central zip for extras and a nice top pocket, so and fits nice and comfortably. Nice padded belt and shoulders and some form to it, so I don't have to worry too much how I pack it compared to perhaps the less well formed.
The non-framed ones,
non-framed ones.
Well, I took the Go-Lite Trek, and I suppose 2 weeks into it now, got into the knack of packing it correctly. Tried a whole variety of different ways, and although it holds volumes, huge amounts of stuff, and carries it well, and I must admit, it doesn't feel uncomfortable on the back. It doesn't look very neat at times, and the knack is definitely to make a cone out of your sleeping system, the Thermarest or foam or whatever, and then pack everything inside that, and it looks a much neater pack. and carries equally well. So I finally cracked using that one, if you like, and it looking right, which was quite nice. And for the first half, I took the top pocket off and just had used it as a roll top. But I found, actually, if I put the top lid back on correctly and used it as a top pocket, I found it actually fitted my backpacking habit. Just like John Manning, I do like a top pocket, I have to say. I think the roll top things work well, but everything's always there in the top pocket when you need it, like the torch and the first aid kit and so on. And that has probably, apart from a small wash kit with the shaving oils and the fingertip toothbrushes and a few other bits and bobs, that's been it. That's all we've taken with us, really. Bought the recording studio with me, and sadly the chargers and batteries have added up to well over a kilo, probably 2 kilos worth of electronic bits, which is annoying. But still, I hope it makes some good entertainment. That pretty well wraps it up for this evening. We're hopefully going to get through the, how do you pronounce it? Fetteriso, is it for? Yeah, Fetteriso Forest tomorrow, on our way to Dunnottar Castle. Whether we make it in one go or two, we're not too sure. We're actually trying to find a village with a campsite and a pub which is near to it, which would be
impossible.
Pleasant is the word I'm looking for. Yeah. But it looks like it might be a bit impossible, but we'll see how we get on. Anyway, we'll update you tomorrow.
Interestingly, the only thing we didn't mention in that gear review were the Alpkit carbon fibre walking poles, which were stored outside the tent. Walking poles are a vital accessory on this trip for sharing the load, stability crossing numerous rocks and streams, and for testing the mysterious depths of peat bogs. Steve Perry was one of several we met using pacer poles, all of whom completely swore by them. Sadly, Steve had a forgetful moment with his during his trip, which I teased him about as we walked into the Fetteriso Forest on the Wednesday morning.
First question has got to be, how have your pacer poles worked out for you this trip?
Unfortunately, I left my pacer poles in the boffy at Glenfeshire. So I've done half the walk without them, but I've really been missing them.
Yeah. Well, if anybody finds them who are listening to this, I'm sure you'd appreciate their return, because they've travelled with you a long way, haven't they?
Oh, they've done a full round of the Munros, and they've done halfway from the West Coast. So, yeah, I'm really missing them, actually. They're like a part of me, so, yeah, I do want them back if anybody finds them.
So, joking aside, the challenge itself, obviously been a completely different sort of thing from the last couple of adventures you've had. What have your impressions been of it as an event?
As an event, it's there's an intense camaraderie going on with a lot of the people who've done the challenge quite a few times, and a lot of the enjoyment is the actual characters you meet, especially the ones who have done it quite a few times, with all the bits of information they can give you on, and tips on route and gear and etc. And also, one of the main things is not get roped into rounds with them in the pubs.
That's a sensible option. You've done most of it, probably all of it, actually, with Lorraine. Have you found it a good way to do it with a companion?
Yeah, walking with Lorraine on the challenge has been good. Obviously, because she has a lot of good information on coming through the mountains, as well as some of the stuff that I've learnt myself. But to be honest, we haven't walked that much just on by ourselves. We've joined lots of people on the way. Some of the people who are also first-time challengers like us, and some people who've done the challenge quite a few times. So it's really good. There's a really friendly feel to the whole challenge, and it's one of those things that you don't know that until you actually go and do it. So give it a go, you know, it's really good.
It's a very unique sort of event from that point of view. I can't think of anything else, actually, that I can think of in Europe that's as a sociable walk instead of a competition.
Definitely, yeah. And also, as far as the social side of things is, when you do the Pennine Way, you'll probably only get 5 or 6 people that you'll keep passing and re-meeting in the evening and things like that. On this thing, especially when you get to places like Braemar, there'll be absolutely hundreds there, and they're all like-minded people like yourself. They love the outdoors, love stopping in tents and I love going for a pint, so it's just a really great feeling.
Compared to your Munro round, obviously the weather's been completely different from a snow point of view, but have you brought the right equipment? Did you sort of pack the right stuff, or did you sort of pack for winter?
I used some of the gear from the winter round. I mean, I brought one of the wrap bags to sleep in that I used on the winter round, and that probably was a little bit warm. I could have gone a bit lighter than that, maybe got the next wrap bag down from that. But a lot of the other stuff, I've gone for more summer gear, a lot of it lighter. So it's just a case of using your common sense, and if you've got experience in the mountains in summer, you know which gear to use. So the time that I spent doing the Munros in Scotland 3 years ago, I generally used a lot of that gear.
Have you brought anything you definitely didn't use that you would say to people, don't bother?
I haven't actually. Everything that's in my pack I have used. I don't really like carrying things if you're only going to use it the odd time. It's got to do something if you are going to carry it. So, no, I can't say I have, to be honest.
And, now obviously you've sort of almost completed now. We're almost at the coast. Would you be tempted to actually do this again?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I think when the October TGO comes out and the application forms in, I'll be sticking mine in.
Excellent, excellent. And just for reference for people, where did you start from and obviously where are you finishing?
Signed out at Mallaig, got the boat over to Inverie, eventually dragged myself out of the old forge and made my way across Scotland to Dunnottar Castle.
And what sort of peaks and routes did you take? Did you take a sort of a fairly straight line, or did you keep nipping off and doing Munros?
We took pretty much a straight line, going through... we ended up at Speen Bridge from Loch Arkaig, having gone through Knoydart. And then we just did... I think we did what a lot of first-time challengers did. We went through the Central Highlands and then to Glenfeshie and across to Braemar via the Geldie Burn. And then just up Loch Allerton, Spithill of Glen Mick, and then out through Glen Lee and along to the coast. So, and I think that is quite a first-timer's route, because we have been walking with a lot of first-timers on this challenge.
Yeah, it's a very beautiful route. And what are your thoughts on the weather and the conditions? Because it's obviously May time in Scotland, can be fairly changeable, can't it?
It can, yeah. So one of the worst months I ever had in Scotland was May, on May 2003 Munro round. But this May trip hasn't been too bad at all. I mean, the first few days when we left Inverie was absolutely glorious. Just a pair of shorts on, walking with a pack, it was absolutely boiling. But we had a bit of rain then in the Central Highlands, and then coming from Braemar, from Loch Allerton over the plateau down to Glasshouse Shielbotha, we had quite a heavy snowstorm, but it was, well, I wouldn't say a snowstorm, heavy snowfall, but I think the ground was too warm by this time, yeah, the snow wasn't sticking. But since then it's not been too bad at all, just a windy night last night.
I know that you've had quite a few memorable events during the crossing, memorable evenings and so on, and Glasshouse Shield has to be one of them. Tell us in your own words just how that happened.
Well, it was quite a bit of a fluke, actually. We got down to the boffy and there was rumours going around that was going to be a heck of a lot of people there. But when we got there, there was just myself, Lorraine McCall and Shirley P. Wiglet. So we got there and there was a guy and his girlfriend there, and they had this massive barbecue going outside the boffy. And I remember walking past this barbecue going into the boffy, and I thought, there's no way them two are going to eat all that. There were fillet steaks on there and everything, so... We was in the boffy, and the next minute the guy's girlfriend came in and goes, come and help yourself. So we was having steak sandwiches, sausage sandwiches, bacon sandwiches, and we finished the night off with 2.5 bottles of whiskey, a bottle of rum and a bottle of wine. So turned into a very memorable night.
Any other memorable nights like that on this crossing?
I did have quite a few drinks on the Friday night when I got in Braemar, and we decided we were going to have the Saturday off. I know the main party was on the Saturday night, but I'd overcooked myself on the Friday, unfortunately. I never made it to the pub on Saturday.
So Thursday night is the sort of the big meal when everybody hopefully finishes, or most of the people finish together. Are you going to the big meal?
I certainly am, yeah. I phoned into HQ to tell them where I was and that I was still alive, and I booked myself a seat for a dinner, and looking forward to getting there, and I might just have the odd pint of Guinness, you never know.
If you were the lucky person who found a pair of battered pacer poles in Glenfeshie, Steve would love them back as they completed the winter round with him. I've had a few people ask me what it was like to walk with two great long-distance hikers like Steve and Lorraine. They both have very different styles. Lorraine is always up front of the group, pushing on and not appearing to need to rest. She seems to be very focused in what she's doing. Steve, on the other hand, has a very easy sort of ambling style, a very deceptive gait. To look at him, he would appear to be popping down the pub, ambling along with his hands in his pockets. However, although I was taller, I felt I had to put more effort than I thought to keep up with him. And both of them also looked like they were only carrying day packs, even though they were just as laden and as heavy as ours. In part 8, we get to Dunnetar Castle, sign off at control and dress up in our best bib and tucker, i.e. a new, clean Challenger t-shirt, before the Thursday night social at the Park Hotel, where we chat to Alison Ashton, Sue Oxley and Steve Smith about their individual trips.
Have you had enough? Or do you want some more?
That's Podcast Bob's challenge story so far. To be continued.
Backpackinglight.co.uk.
Go lighter, go faster, go further.
To subscribe to our show, please follow the instructions on our website or search for us in the iTunes directory.
This brings us to the end of our programme for this evening.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.